Hey, Game of Thrones nerds, listen, Mother's Day is coming, and you have to be prepared. Trust me, you need to be prepared. Best thing you can do is get your mother or your spouse or someone, if you know someone who has a mother that you're close with, or whatever, any mother that's out there, you got to be able to take care of them. And the one way I know how to take care of them, well, at least one of them at least, is mascara. Absolutely give them the best mascara in the world, because mascara makes any woman feel beautiful. Just you throw that bad boy on, boom, done. Check out MinuteWithMary.com. Look at the 4D mascara, brand new product that just came out. I'm telling you, you're going to win Mother's Day. You are absolutely going to win Mother's Day if you get this for that mother that's special in your life. From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The North Remembers. It's a podcast dedicated to the show of Game of Thrones and HBO. So sit back, relax, because winter is here.
Hello, hello, everybody. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and Mary, unfortunately, is, well, actually, fortunately for her, but unfortunately for me, she's in Florida right now. And
I'm like in King's Landing. I have no idea about the cold or anything.
Winter is not here for Mary. In fact, she's a summer born, children. She might as well be in Dorne for all we know. Unfortunately, you're probably going to be stuck with me speaking a lot of the time, because my audio, as of right now, is better than hers, because I'm in studio and she is, in just the beautiful ocean, sunny gorgeousness of Florida. So I hate you, Mary. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do with my life. You know what? One thing I wanted to bring up before we get into the whole thing, and welcome everybody for the listener feedback episode of The Long Night. One thing I wanted to talk about is, actually, I am genuinely surprised. Well, I mean, yes and no. I'm genuinely surprised at the reaction that The Long Night has received.
Really?
Especially about the lighting situation. I didn't anticipate that kind of reaction, but I'm not super surprised about it, because that's just the internet, and the internet is a alone, dark, and angry place.
For people like me who don't really go to the dark, angry places, can you elaborate? Like, you know, I talked about Squinterfell and how it was a little hard. And, you know, my actual harder thing is I've been rewatching different scenes on my phone. And if I'm watching it during the daytime, it is very hard to watch on my phone. Like, I have no idea what's going on. But can you give us a little synopsis of what you're talking about for people who, like me, try to avoid the dark corners of the internet?
Right. Yeah, no, it's just a bunch of people complaining about how, oh, it's the Squinterfell, like you said. But, you know, it even got so bad that the cinematographer for the episode had to defend it. He had to be like, this is the choice that we made. Listen, I know it's not too dark because I shot it. And here's an issue that he did. He defended it, and he said, here's the problem that you have. You're not watching it. He's like Game of Thrones is a theatrical show, and you're not watching a theater. You're watching it in your home. So, you know, you're not in the prime viewing experience that you would be that if you were in the theater. So you should be watching it in a darkened room. There should not be these random lights hitting your screen. And more importantly, your TV should be tuned to the correct settings. Okay. Now, I, as a video file and an audio file, I appreciate where he's coming from, because I spend hours tuning my TV. I make sure that our home theater is perfect.
Oh my God, it's so true.
For us. The problem is that not everybody is a total dork like me. They usually just get their TV and it's the settings that they get from the factory. They don't really pay attention to it. And that's okay. That's how it's supposed to be, right? And the other issue is that it's just not a good look, in my opinion. Having to defend it the way that he did, using the defense that he did. It kind of reminds me, do you remember back when the iPhone 2 came out and Steve Jobs was saying, okay, everyone's holding the phone incorrectly. You need to hold the phone this way. And the reason why he was saying that is because people's fingers were covering the antenna that was within the phone, so people were losing signal. And Steve Jobs had to literally teach people how to hold a phone. It reminds me like that. And it wasn't a good look for Apple then, and it's not a good look for Game of Thrones now. And while I disagree with all the criticism, I the defense of it and how it all looks is just not a good look, in my opinion. Would you agree with that? Or do you think it was fair for him to defend it the way that he did?
Well, you know, I think that it was... Okay. I would say if that were me, and if I spent all that time, and this was like, I mean, think about it. That was like the most expensive episode for this season. So much time and effort and thought was put into it. I think I as me, Mary Larson, I would defend myself and explain it. But on the flip side, as like a regular show watcher, I'd be like, then you didn't make it for your general clientele. Like, right. I'm sorry, but not everybody has like this kind of experience. If Game of Thrones had said, you know what, for this special episode, we're going to actually be showing it in theaters, then at least they could have said, we told you, like, that is the optimal viewing experience. But for the most part, like, people watch this on their iPads, in their beds, they like watch it at work during coffee break on repeats. You know, they're just watching it from their regular TVs. And as you said, 99% of the people get their TV, plug it in, and just believe that it's going to work right. Yep. So, you know, Game of Thrones, maybe they should have had a warning ahead of time. P.S. You should watch this in a dark room. I don't even know. But what I can tell you is that I would have defended myself saying, this is my art and craft. You know, this was a very special episode. This is how it should be watched. And I think I would have added something in a bit more positive light, saying, you know, now for your rewatches, try it out. Try this out in a dark room next time. But
X, Y, and Z settings.
But I think, you know, they forgot that, like, this isn't, you know, this is the general public. It's not the Star Wars nerds who make sure that they have 8-point surround sound so they can hear, you know, all the different battle sounds. Like,
7-point surround sound.
Okay, sorry. For all of you, Blake has decided that our surround sound needs to be done by the George Lucas standards. This is like a thing, I guess. There's different surround sound
settings. It's THX certified. Thank you.
I don't even know what it means, but ours are made perfect for Star Wars viewing, which was quite nice. Oh, we didn't even do it. We have not actually watched this episode in our dark basement with the perfect surround sound.
Right.
We watched it the cheapy way.
Right.
So as a general viewer, I can see why people are upset, honestly. And honestly.
Another thing that comes into mind, too, as we're talking about it is, you know, Game of Thrones, you know, had Game of Thrones, the show, set the expectation for us to be like, you need to watch Game of Thrones, the show, like this, then that defense makes sense. But it doesn't make sense because Game of Thrones hasn't set that vocabulary for us. It hasn't set that expectation for us. We've just all watched it the way that we've watched it, and we've never had an issue before.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden they're saying, well, you should be watching Game of Thrones like this. Well, where was this information when we first started watching the show?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I see both sides. I still believe that the general public is wrong and you ought to watch it the way that the guy says you should watch it. But even still, it is an artistic choice that they went with because they're trying to create, within reason here, they're trying to create a realistic experience for you as it would have been at Winterfell at night, and they shot it that particular way.
So, I think using the word that people are wrong is a little abrasive, like it's a little rough. I think instead, you know, that we can just say, listen, we appreciate Squintergate 2019 just decide that before Sunday you want to rewatch it again in a dark room.
Yeah, no, I'm not going that far. I can't co-sign on that. All right, so before we get into the rest of this episode, this is actually not about Mary and I. This is about you guys and your feedback for the Battle of Winterfell. I wanted to remind you that you can subscribe to this podcast on any podcatcher of your choice, whether it be Apple Podcasts or any of the various lesser-known Android apps. You can also find us on social media at Mary and Blake on Facebook and Twitter, and on YouTube as well. And if you want to listen to these podcasts on the internet, you can. Just go to maryandblake.com, where you can find the North Remembers This podcast, as well as all of our other shows, including Outlander Cast, which is about Outlander on Stars, This Is Us 2, which is about This Is Us on NBC, and even Mary's podcast, Minute with Mary, the podcast about network marketing and business and all those great things. Just head to maryandblake.com. Marvin, are you ready to get into the listener feedback?
Sure I am.
Let's do it. All right, so the first one comes from the website over at maryandblake.com, and it comes from Rita in cold Chicago. And she says, Blake, please give yourself an outstanding for your description of the ebb and flow of tension in this episode. You know what, Rita in cold Chicago? I will. On YouTube, Dreamer Deborah says, okay, so it is official. Mary and Blake are the best ever in breaking down episodes.
Oh my God.
I love this. I had to listen to this episode three times. I love Game of Thrones, and this episode for me was amazing. So I too, Blake, was nervous and couldn't sit still at all watching this. And Mary, I too love when Arya did her thing. Absolutely wow. You are so great. Loved all your Outlander analysis, and now loving Game of Thrones. Thanks for being the best and entertaining us all. Well, Dreamer Deborah, you are welcome. I'm happy.
You're welcome.
Mary, what does Crystal Isle say? Because I'm going to say the name for you because you couldn't say it last week.
Thank you. Ghost and Rhaegar are indeed alive in the episode 4 trailer. As far as what they're going to do with those bodies, once again, the trailer, they're going to burn them all. Burn them all! I can't not say it like the Mad King. I imagine it's going to be the largest fire the North has ever seen. A little man's raider callback.
Oh, yeah.
Mary, what would you have been a sufficient number of deaths, though? Ooh, Mary, what would have been a sufficient number of deaths? You're not the only person I would like to ask. I'm not trying to single you out. This is just one of those classrooms I feel comfortable enough raising my hand. Did you want Jaime or Brienne to die? There's got to be some final Jaime Cersei thing, and Brienne needs to be around to answer the questions of who he really loves, and he needs to die in the arms of the person he really loves. Tormund or Grey Worm? Yeah, I suppose either of those could have been decent enough choices to die in the battle, but it's possible they might die for a United Nations-like attempt at the government afterwards. Can't have that without a wildling leader, and who knows, perhaps either Greyjoy or Missandei, if they live, will be a leader of some sort elsewhere. I'm trying to figure out what's going to happen. This show is a fruitless exercise. I've tried dozens of ideas, and I'm not even close ever. Neither Sansa nor Tyrion are going to die in this episode. Can't have Jon or Dany die this early. Arya had to have at least one major kill left in her. She did it with that dagger, eh? And she and Gendry might be the Lord and Lady of Storm's End someday. Davos needed to be a witness to Melisandre's death, so who else is left? Pod? So what you're saying is you really wanted Podrick Payne to die, eh? He sang his song and now he's got to go. Chris? Yes. That is who needed to die.
You wanted Pod to die, really?
Yep.
See, I feel like... I'm sorry. Continue.
I wanted to cry. Here's why. I expected to cry in the last episode. Okay, Melisandre, I'm sorry, not going to make me cry. If anything, Jorah Mormont made people cry. He didn't make me cry. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like, that guy's old by this point. Let's be real. He's lived his life. He's done a great job. He lived through Grayscale, whatever. If anything, I mean, it would have been really nice for him to retire on an island in Dor, but I think he did a great job. I think his death was very valiant. The Little Bear... She kicked ass. She didn't make me cry. That's the way Little Bear would have wanted to go down. So I'm proud of her death.
Yep.
I agree. Jaime and Brienne, like, they need to do something with Cersei so they couldn't die. I don't think any of the Starks really could have died in this particular episode. I think Tyrion, he needs to live a little bit longer. I think it would have been really nice, meaning totally in George R.R. Martin nice, meaning make you want to cry, if Podrick died. I think that we had a very tender moment talking about his schlong and singing a song. And I think that, you know, he could have been saving Brienne or saving Tyrion once again. Like, how amazing would that have been if he would have saved Tyrion? I would have cried. I did not cry in this episode. I was ready to cry, which means that a heck of a lot of people are either going to die or they're just going to end this Disney-wise and have like one or two people. So I think that they can kill Podrick. I really do. I think they can kill Podrick pretty soon, just because like he's an amazing character, but this is Game of Thrones. So that's why I would have chose Chris. I would have wanted a couple more deaths. I would have wanted a dragon to die. I know that a dragon is going to die because they have that dragon killing thing. So we're at least going to kill one dragon and maybe both dragons. I don't know what's going to happen, but I don't think Podrick's long for this earth. And Grey Worm, you know, he and Melisandre, like, not Missandei, like, I don't know. Like, yes, I'd love for them to go to the island. Once again, if they decide to end this in the Disney version, perfect. Otherwise, like, I would have liked Grey Worm to die. There is no Grey Worm. The reason he's alive is because he was behind all of the Unsullied.
Yes.
In the beginning, he was up front. And then he was freaking out, looking at all the fire not lighting. And he was trying to figure things out. And thanks to him, he had Melisandre do it.
Right.
But let's be real. Grey Worm should have been dead by now. If he had stayed in the front, he would have been dead. Right. Instead, he was wiggling in the back, probably because he's like, you know, I kind of want to go to that island. Not going to lie. Like, he's kind of become sullied. Like, he was unsullied, and now he's in love.
He's been sullied.
So now he's like, he does have fear. He's, you know what it is? You know what the Unsullied remind me of? They remind me of Jedis. Like, you're not supposed to love anyone because that holds you back. That holds you back from your cause. You're not supposed to hate or love. And I feel like that's the Unsullied. That's why they get, you know, taken care of, so that there is no attachment, so that they can fight. Well, the problem is Grey Worm now loves Missandei. So he's got something to live for. So when he was wiggled back, I was like, oh, look at you, Grey Worm. Mm-hmm. Look at you.
Yep, yep.
Like, watching your fellows die. Yes, you're figuring things out. Yes, you're working. Like, he needed to live. He needed to be able to tell Melisandre to do that. But on the flip side, Grey Worm would have made me cry.
Right.
Like, Grey Worm would have made me cry. Podrick would have made me cry. Sir Davos, like, I love him, but he would have made me cry. Mm-hmm. Tormund wouldn't have made me cry. No. I mean, Tormund, the emotional weight for him is kind of like that, the fire knight. I keep saying his name wrong. So, you know, the guy with one eye, he died, but he didn't make me cry. Yeah. So, and we can't have the Hound die. So, yeah, I would have liked either Podrick or Grey Worm to die just because it would have made me cry.
I think the smart money would have been on Podrick. The emotional money would have been on Jaime or Brienne, one of the two.
But they need to have the Cersei situation, so they can't. I agree. The emotional weight, and I think that they wanted night-wise for it to be, you know, goodbye, Jorah.
Yeah. No, I agree. You're right. All right. On Facebook, we got Chad Meyer saying, I don't think the prince that was promised prophecy has been fulfilled yet. I think Jon, who was technically a prince, will kill Cersei to put an end to all darkness, not just the Night King darkness. But I've been wrong before. Chad,
so what exactly is the prophecy again?
That there's like a prince, and the term prince that was promised is technically right, but as Melisandre says, you know, these prophecies are, you know, they're amorphous. They're subject to interpretation.
Who made this, though? Who made this prophecy?
Well, I'm not sure who made the prophecy, but Melisandre is the one that talks about it quite often.
And she's the only person that talks about it with the Lord of Light. Hold on. According to the prophecy, this figure will be born amidst salt and smoke and pull a sword named Lightbringer from the flames.
Well, this is the book version. This is the book version. That's Azor Ahai. But remember, again, like the last episode we just talked about, the book version is a lot more in detail than what the show version is giving us.
Okay.
So the show version has been someone who is going to bring the end to all the darkness. And so far, it proves to be Arya. But Chad makes an excellent argument here that all darkness, not necessarily just the Night King. And if that's the case, and if killing Cersei is the one, then my guess would probably be Jamie. Although I'm I'm take cornered on the fact that I still maintain that it's going to be Tyrion who kills Cersei. I'm take cornered on that. All right, Carolyn Thames says Jorah had to die. He is Dany's number one protector. It's the only way they can kill her off in the next three episodes because he died protecting the love of his life. Excellent point, Mary. What do you think about mm-hmm. that? It's the only way that Dany can die. That's the only way that Dany can die is if Jorah is dead. I totally agree.
Wait, hold on. So the only way you can kill her is because he... Oh, you're right. Does have dragons, guys. She still has dragons.
Right, but Jorah is the emotional core of that relationship, and he is the one who's sworn his life, like, with purpose. Like, the dragons love her, and the dragons take care of her, obviously, but Jorah swore his life to protect her. You know, Jon Snow has not done that.
He bent a knee, but he hasn't sworn his life.
No, Jorah was the one, and I think that the emotional math adds up there. Christine Weimer Ferguson says, where to begin? 4.8 dragons for me, and I'll try to explain why it lost the 0.2. First off, the things that I loved, the rise and fall, the tension that Blake always knows is the hallmark of great television, and boy, did this episode have that. Mm-hmm. Just as you thought, here we go, a leg up. Then it came crashing down as your hopes went that way. The scene of the Dothraki galloping into battle with their flaming swords was breathtaking and so hopeful, only to literally be extinguished by the whites. Ugh. And then, the way they brought the tension down by changing the scene down to the crypts, or when they retreated and characters like Arya and Beric and the Hound were trying to hide in the castle. The quiet moments like Arya in the library were astoundingly good.
Mm-hmm.
Then the dragons fighting in the air and the whites en masse heading face first into the flaming trenches. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. And then the events that transpired to get Arya where she needed to be. In hindsight, it all makes so much sense. But I was utterly shocked and awed when she was the one to assassinate the Night King. I did not see that coming in a million years. I also really didn't expect the Night King and the White Walkers to be defeated in this episode. The only part that brought it down a notch for me was the way that it unfolded exactly as Bran said it was going to was a bit on the nose for me. I really thought that there would be the big twist that would come from it. Instead, it was Melisandre coming to the rescue and Arya being the one to save the day. Those were the most unexpected surprises for me. And not that I want more main characters to die, I kind of thought there would be more die I kind of thought there would be more death than I did last night. Not the end of the world, because there are still three major episodes left, and we need characters for that overall. But other than that, I'm really pleased. Would you agree with that?
I mean, yeah, I think that I was expecting more people to die. I was fine with Bran kind of telling the truth, except it's like, Bran, why didn't you know that Arya was going to kill him? Like, this is the iffy thing that I have about Bran. Like, if you can see the future, if you know what's going on, then why not just tell everybody? Why not tell Tyrion, hey, this is what's going to happen. You're going to be okay. I don't know. That's the only issue that I have. I have problems with people can see the future.
What's the next one?
No. Okay. Megan Ruiz Pear said, I'm so conflicted. Never wheat. It shook so hard. But the Night King is just dead with no explanation of his motives. Feels very hollow. I love that Arya did it, but we need more from Bran about why the Night King had this motivation and what kickstarted it. I agree, Megan. I totes agree. Because, I mean, at least we understand a little bit that, like, he wants to eradicate, you know, the human existence. He was created by the children, you know, because they wanted to kick butt with the humans. So, you know, is it like, in my opinion, it's like, you know, did they create him with, like, kill humans, eradicate humans, and that's just always been his focus? So, like, you know, that was his one motive. Is he non-emotional? And what the heck with trying to take all of the babies? Like, now, what about little baby Sammy? Why did you take all of those babies? And we're never going to know.
I will say,
unless Bran tells us.
I will say that there's a lot of unanswered questions about the White Walkers, and... you know, there are two schools of thought. Either you just use them as that, like you just use them as the force that is coming, and that is it. And there's merits to that. Or you go down that rabbit hole and you explain it all. What you don't want to do is you don't want to do a hybrid. You don't want to do both. And they kind of went down that road a little bit, explaining where the Night King came from. So it sets your viewers up to expect answers. So, I mean, I always use Michael Myers as an example. You know, setting Michael Myers up as a force makes sense. Trying to explain it the way that, like, Rob Zombie did in the remakes that he made, then it takes away from that character because he's not just a force anymore. He's something other. And, you know, it makes it hard. So, you know, a lot of people are trying to tie it into at least the lack of answers. They're trying to tie in the fact that they're going to have the prequel by Jane Goldman coming up on HBO. It's already been announced and Naomi Watts is starring in it. They're thinking that they're saving the Night King story for that television show, and it's going to be called The Long Night, apparently. I'm not sure. I would say that if that's the case, that is a huge disservice to Game of Thrones, and it's a huge... It would be inappropriate. It would be inappropriate of the current showrunners, David Benioff and Dan Weiss, to not tell a certain aspect of their story because there's another show coming. I would be upset by that.
You don't want to let the mystery be?
Well, no. I mean, if they had an intention of telling that story, but then HBO said, don't tell that story.
Oh. Maybe this is just an incentive to read George R. R. Martin's final books.
Yeah, but even then, like I still feel like that's inappropriate of the showrunners. If they have a story and they want to tell, they need to tell it. Say it. Don't hold back because of world building or books or other shows. No, tell your story and that's that. Jayla Cray says, Blake, the music technique you were referring to is called a shepherd's tone or a shepherd glissando. That's what it is there.
Thank you. So Nick Storr said they heard in another podcast. Is that allowed? Yes, of course it's allowed. That the unpredictability of death has gone since they stopped relying on the books seems to be the case here. Ooh, I agree. It's like, you know, the fearlessness of killing off beloved characters has changed since they've gone off the books. I agree. If they were going George R. R. Martin style, not Disney style, they would have been killing Podrick, I think.
I think there's an argument there, yeah.
I think they probably would have killed off a bunch more. Grey Worm, for example. They would have killed as many people as they could who they don't need for integral pieces of plot.
Unless they are integral for pieces of plot, right?
Like Davos, they would have killed Davos. They would have killed...
Well, like, here's the thing. Like, and this is where you kind of get into show planning because, like, there's supposed to be another huge battle. Emilia Clarke came out and said this on episode 5. The battle that they're going to be having is bigger than the Battle of Winterfell. Like, it's bigger. And I just wonder if those deaths are being saved for that. It'd be interesting to see. So I'm not sure. Kate Houston says, Davos wants Melisandre dead because she killed the Princess Baratheon, Shireen.
Yeah.
That's the reason why
she sure did.
I would too. Sandy Doka Parfait says, I love seeing Dany realize her vulnerability. Without a dragon, she is screwed on the battlefield. That is true. That is absolutely true. I mean, she held her own. Yeah. She held her own killing people, but she's not the same kind of leader that she is without her dragons.
She needs like a special weapon. Jon Snow kind of dropped the ball there. Like, he needs to teach her a little bit of basic self-defense.
Just
think after all this time with the Dothraki. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, she should have had we need to see her practice. Cause, you know, God forbid she's off her dragon again. She needs a little something. Julian Hill says, well, you could see what was going on during Helm's Deep and it seemed just as dramatic. It was a little bit well lit. I agree.
Betty Lou Torres says, I love that John is consistently a bad general. He rules with his heart and not his head. Arya is cold logic. And it made sense that she saw what needed to be done. And by the way, her dog, a Chihuahua rescue, Lula Belle, loves Game of Thrones and has a doggy crushed on Ghost. Oh, that's so cute.
That's but adorable. You know,
Betty Lou makes a great point here. John has shown necessarily has not been a great general. I mean, in terms of the Battle of the Bastards, the one time that I feel like he showed himself to be in charge and in good hands was the Battle of the Wall, when the Free Folk were coming through the wall, and he was like telling everybody, "You got to go here," and he sent Sir Alistair downstairs and was like, "Get the hell out of here," and the whole thing. That's the one time he showed to be a good general. Other than that, so far, he has not proven himself. Would you agree or would you disagree with this?
I would disagree. I think he had a really good, solid plan. And I think he's a great authoritative figure. Mm-hmm. He gets people to work together. I just think that on the battlefield, he gets a little lost.
Yep.
You know?
You're yelling at dead dragons, you know?
Yeah. But on the flip side, like, I think that he's a great planner. I think he's a great communicator, and he really riles people up to work together.
Sure.
Good job in that essence. But yeah, once the battle actually comes, John's just a little, he gets a little lost.
And in the football world, we would say he's not an X and O's guy. He is not an X and O's guy. Lynn Henderson says, "Hello, Mary Blake. Wow, what a weekend. Here's a tough question for you. Which was better, the final battle in Endgame or the battle for Winterfell?" Mary, I'm going to leave this one to you. What do you think?
Ooh. I will say Winterfell.
I would agree with you. I think that the camera work and everything involved in the Battle of Winterfell was better. The funny thing is, Endgame, you know, there was, you know, a big battle at the end. And I'm not going to spoil anything, but the movie is more about honoring Marvel itself and having that emotional connection during that battle.
I would agree. I think that the emotional, like, I was much more emotional with Endgame, but I liked the filming and I liked how the battle happened better in Winterfell. In Endgame, it was just like, oh, how lucky. Oh, how lucky that this happened. Oh, look at that. And then, oh, well, isn't that lucky too?
Right.
Whereas with Winterfell, it was a battle and you could just see people like, I don't know. It was just different, but I felt more emotional in Endgame.
Yep. This one is kind of a handcuff comment here between two people. Elizabeth Schaub says, "There's going to be a whole lot of babies named Arya soon." And Andy Serrato says, "Yes, I'm seriously considering this since I'm pregnant."
Well, fun fact, when we were pregnant with our daughter, we were thinking about naming her Daenerys. And we just thought, you know, Daenerys is such a great character. And the reason that we took it off the list was because we were like, but what if Daenerys goes bad? Right. Like, what if Daenerys isn't that nice? And I'm not going to lie, Blake and I were driving, what was it, last week? And we were like, you know.
thank God we didn't do that.
Based upon this season and Samwell's comments about Dany, we're kind of happy that we named her something different.
Yep. So Aaron Frederick Rose says, "You know, Mary, if you got House Mormont in that quiz you took in the first episode, that's really not a bad thing, particularly how the Mormonts represented on this episode. Hashtag Giant Slayer, hashtag Defender of the Dragon Mother."
You know, it's funny because, like, I was bummed that I got Mormont because I really wanted it to be Stark because that's who I feel like I align with. But as I've been settling with it, I think that it's true. I do think that it's true. And I'm now sad that my house is all gone. Maybe I will live on. Maybe I'll create my own shirts and rock House Mormont. Even though Target doesn't have House Mormont shirts, maybe I'll just have to make my own.
Mm-hmm. Julie Green Gibson says, "After an evening of reviewing the latest episode, I've come down to this. 3.5 dragons. This much hyped episode was fairly disappointing. And while the night battle scene was very eerie and cool with the first wave of the Dothraki's army's swords being extinguished, mm-hmm. the rest of the night battle was a fail, in my opinion. The poor filmography, I think she means cinematography, and the darkness made it very difficult to tell what was happening much of the time. And my daughter and I kept trying to figure out which dragon was on the screen. The bad dragon, or the John dragon, or the dandy dragon. It was hard to track what was happening. And while this may be the way you feel in the middle of a battle, it was difficult and frustrating way to tell the story. So my GBG, since the rating is so low, SBG, the stupid, bad, and great. Stupid number one. The stupid number one, really? I've been screaming for 3 weeks that hiding in a crypt is a really stupid idea when your enemy can raise the dead. Why didn't they burn the dead before sending the women and children down there? So incredibly stupid. Stupid number two, landing a dragon amidst an army of the dead. Thanks for saving John, but stay aloft, Danny. Jorah coming to her rescue made his death a very poignant moment, but so unnecessary. The bad. They're all dead. Boom. That's it. Now, back to petty fighting over a silly throne. All that buildup, and like a snapped finger, the enemy and his army are gone. What a letdown. The great Arya, who won the war? Girls! This feisty little girl who definitely showed her vulnerability and fears snuck up on the Night King just like she did to Jon a few episodes ago. All the buildup of this storyline, all of her training came to use in this one awesome moment. Thus far, this season has been fairly typical for a show that has always been surprising and fun ride. I expected so much more, hoping the next three episodes also hold so much more.
I want to like rewrite the lyric to the Beyonce song. I obviously have my allergies right now, but if any of you want to collaborate, check out the lyrics and we can rewrite it for Game of Thrones.
What do we got for our emails, Marvin?
Raylan wrote in, "Hey guys, it's been so fun listening to you discuss Game of Thrones that I just had to chime in. Episode 3 was so fun to watch. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. My husband and I even had to stop a few times to catch our breath. Blake, I really appreciated your comments on why it's so dark. I definitely was a critic of the darkness, but I think you've convinced me that the darkness was integral to the story. Watching the episode was fun and exciting. I loved every moment, but the next morning, I have to say, I was a little disappointed. The Night King dying in episode 3 was not how I envisioned this final season playing out. I always viewed the Night King as the biggest threat. While everyone is goofing off and fighting for the throne, the true threat is death above the wall. But tonight it dawned on me. I now have no idea what is going to happen in the final 3 episodes. This show is so good at giving you the unexpected. Killing the Night King so early now opens to the final episodes to so many possibilities. I'm really excited to see how this all unfolds. And last point, they better explain what Bran was doing when he went off flying with the birds. Goodness, Bran, do something.
I think there's a reasonable argument to be made here, Mary, and I want your thoughts on this. You know, I was reading an article the other day and I posted it on the Mary and Blake Facebook page, which was, you know, whenever you're planning a season of television, the middle episode generally, you know, give or take an episode, has the turning point of the season. It's the inciting incident that propels the rest of the season. And in this case, it's the Battle of Winterfell. And usually what happens when you have this inciting incident is after the inciting incident, everything has changed. And unfortunately, so far, I think the argument can be made that the world of Game of Thrones remains unchanged. Even though the Dothraki die, and some of the Unsullied die, pretty much everything has remained the same. Jon and Dany are in power. Most of our characters are alive. And we still are playing the Game of Thrones. We're still heading towards Cersei. So while things happened and while it was filmed in a spectacular way and it was a great battle and I loved the episode, the argument here is that nothing has really changed for our characters because of the battle. Would you agree?
Yes. But on the flip side, what I've always thought was really interesting was that it was the people of Winterfell. It was the people of the North who believed in this stuff, who talked about this stuff, who their phrase is winter is coming. The rest of the world, like, didn't have these stories from old Nan, weren't raised like this, didn't take pride in going to fight for the wall. Like, that's where they sent their rejects. And it reminds me a little bit, for those of you who have watched Outlander, of like how, you know, people from different villages have these beliefs of like the fairies, you know what I mean? Like, but it's like part of their culture, and this is like how they were raised, and this is what they talked about. But if you're an outsider, if you're an outlander from this area, you come on in, you're like, what are you talking about, fairies taking away people? But like, if this is your culture, if this is how you were raised, this is a big deal. So for the people of the North, this was always part of their culture. This was their stories. This was their nightmares. This is what they were raised to take pride in protecting. But to the rest of the world, this was never a threat. This was nothing that ever was brought up to them. So I find it to be really interesting that once again, the whole winter, the Night King, it was still just there. It was still, it ended at Winterfell. So for future generations, the people of Dorne, the people of Meereen, all these other places, it will still like never be known to them. But the kids of Winterfell and of the North will grow up hearing these stories again and hearing about the Battle of Winterfell. And I just, it made me just think about these different cultures where this is how it is. Like, there's things that we here in the United States, we barely know about the massacres and the crazy things that happen in other areas of the world because it's not part of our culture. So I just find it really interesting that from the get-go, you know, we hear Bran wanting to hear about these stories of giants and Gwumpkis or whatever it is. Gwumpkis are actually like a Polish food. It's like a cabbage.
Giants and the pierogies.
The Gwumpkis are going to come get you.
Pierogies are coming. Pierogies are coming.
But you know what I mean? Like having time to reflect on it, I'm like, Cersei got to see an undead once. But like, aside from that in her life, that was never part of her culture, right? Never part of her worries. And the people of the South, those summer born, like, they will never know. Winter never even came to them. Like, how messed up is that? It didn't even snow in King's Landing.
Well, it did. It did a little bit. I remember when Jamie was riding
away.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, though, I guess. I think you're right. I love that dynamic about the North and the tales, and like, it's kind of,
yeah.
I love that dynamic. I think it's phenomenal. And it is the people of the North that had to battle it back. But I guess the ultimate argument is, right, exactly, the people of the North believed in it to begin with. They fought it back, and everything is still kind of the same. Yes, the Night King came. The Night King is dead. Yes, it all happened. But the world that we know, the world of Game of Thrones, is still the same. The South, people of the South, don't believe in all the crap. They never experienced it. They don't have to experience it. People of the North did. They fought it. And we're still playing the Game of Thrones. So, like,
well, let's be real. That's how it is in the world. That's how it is.
Like, right. But reality is not an excuse. Reality is not an excuse for storytelling. So, like, just because that's the way that it is in the real world does not mean that that's the way that it should happen in the Game of Thrones. Listen, I'm not saying I agree with all of this. I'm just saying, like, the argument here is a sound argument.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to find a way to combat it, and I don't know how. I don't know how yet. All right. This one comes from Paula. She says, hello, Mary and Blake. Greetings from Montana, where winter has returned. Yes, it was snowing outside when I watched the Battle of Winterfell. Paula, I am very sorry.
I'm jealous.
She said, I'm going to go full nerd for episode 3 on Game of Thrones because, damn it, it is deserved and far too long of a simplified GBG for Facebook comment. So, Paula, I'm going to play this for you now. There you go. I was thinking about what was really astounding about this episode, so I did a little research, and I put my earbuds in and turned my phone face down, and what follows is a listing with general timestamps of the entirety of the actual conversation in this episode, meaning more than one fast line call-out or a scream across the battlefield to light the trench. At about 9 minutes in the first conversation, of more than one line in which Melisandre says a few words, brings the light, and then announces she'll peace out afterwards. At 16:15, there's a short bit between Jon and Dany as he says the Night King is coming, and she says the dead are already there. I think Jon of all people understands that, Dany. At 19:31, we have the conversation between Arya and Sansa when she sends Sansa to the crypt. gives her a knife and reminds her which end to use. At 3130, as Sansa and Tyrion are in the crypt, Sansa tells Tyrion the most heroic thing they can do now is look truth in the face. Ouch! Way to yuck our yum, Crypt Keeper. At 33 minutes, there's a short interaction in the Weirwood, a news update from Theon, and Bran wargs out. At 4:10, in the callout from Dondarrion to Clegane on how badass Arya is in comparison. At 52:28, Dondarrion finally dies, like for real this time, and Melisandre waxes philosophical about his purpose and gives Arya a little push towards her. That is the last conversation of more than a sentence or death rattles and battles and grunts. And at 1 hour and 9 minutes, we have a little interaction between Sansa and Tyrion as he kisses her hand, but no speaking. This is where the beautiful, heart-wrenching piano began. And 4 minutes later, Bran tells Theon he's a good man and thanks him. And that is it. There's not one more talky bit in the whole episode. And that brings me to the point of this exercise. I've listened to your podcasts for long enough to have a little Blake voice in the back of my head saying, don't tell me, show me. I'm awestruck when I think of that in the context above. Even if you added in a couple of one-liners here and there I didn't include above, we are still talking, what, maybe 10 or 12 entire speaking interactions in a show that was 1 hour and 20 minutes long? Yes, we still got the entire battle story and then some. And for 7 seasons, they have shown us who these people are, how story arcs have changed, what we had to fear, and people or places we have come to love. We understood 1 hour and 20 minutes of battle because we felt it surround us in the show direction and tone. We saw it in the faces of those we care about. We heard it in the cry of the dragons. We shouted and cried as the music tossed us from excitement to terror to sorrow. We saw it in Dany's tears and cried with her. We knew how much it meant for Theon to hear that someone saw bravery in him. And the entirety of my GBG cannot be broken down because never have I seen a show that has paid so much attention to detail and showing us all along the way that could come to an episode like this, and with as a few words as possible, we get it. We felt it with all of our being, and all of the dragons go to all of the people that work together to make this show what it is and have worked tirelessly along the way to give us an episode like this. The battle of day or night is over, so let the final game commence. Love you guys, and so glad to be able to enjoy this last step of the journey with you both. Paul and Mary, I know I speak for you when I play this. If there's one thing, if there's one message I will ever point to from now on when it comes to the Battle of Winterfell, it will be this email that we received from Paula. This is the perfect defense. The perfect defense of the Battle of Winterfell. Would you agree?
100%.
I think Paula, excellent job. I would play Outstanding twice for you, but I'm not sure if I can go there quite yet. Mary, are you ready for the voicemails?
You bet.
All right, let's do it.
Hey there, Mary and Blake. Love the show. Love all the interactions. I'm hoping this gets Mary all a quiver. But Daenerys has one more betrayal to go, according to the prophecy, a betrayal of love. I believe that betrayal of love will be done by her dragon, Drogon. She will order Drogon to burn Jon for treason and to test whether he's Targaryen, because dragons don't burn. But Drogon will refuse, and then he will bond himself to Jon and only allow Jon to ride him. What do you think?
Mary, what do you think?
First and foremost, my friend, you need to be a podcaster. You've got a good voice. Or like an audiobook reader. Second of all, damn. Because of course, I in the last episode said we haven't seen Jon walk through fire yet. That would be amazing. And I like it because as much as Dany like says she loves John, I just think she likes having rumpy pumpy with John. Like, you know, let's be real. They haven't really been together too awfully long. Maybe she does love him. I think she admires him. But the moment he told her he's a Targaryen, I think that love is out the window. So I agree that if there needs to be a betrayal of love, it would need to be from a dragon, because now Jorah is dead. And that's the only other person that she, I think, I honestly like don't, I don't really believe that Daenerys like 100% loves Jon. I believe that she loved Jorah. I believe that she loves her dragons. I believe that she loved Khal Drogo. That's about it. So I like this.
Yeah, I'm still not in on the Jon and Dany dynamic, like in terms of loving each other. I'm not 100% in on it.
So it's puppy love, and it's like rumpy pumpy, and it's the end of the world. So let's just, you know, it's like when you go to summer camp and you find that person and you're like, oh, I'm so wrapped up in this emotion and just the fun of it and everything that's going on. And I don't know. That's what I think. I think it's summer camp love, yeah, summer but camp like love. Dead.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of the dragon being the last one to betray her with a love. And having it be Dany ordering someone to burn Jon, it's even better. I love it.
Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Janine from Pennsylvania, and we just watched the episode. I was very, very stressed. My husband had to comfort me the whole time. I was pretty much hyperventilating, but that ending was amazing. I feel like it really gave it closure, and we found out that Arya did the hand switch before while she was dueling with Brianna Tarth while they were practicing. So we've seen this before. Still incredible. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say. Bye.
Well, Mary, it seems to be true that Arya did do this when she was practicing with Brienne. Makes sense. What do you think?
I believe it.
I believe it too. I totally believe it. All right, let's do the next one.
Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Erin calling from Middletown, Connecticut. I give this episode 4.6 dragons. My good, bad, and great? Good, we had some excellent send-offs to characters we love. Theon died becoming the hero he always wanted to be. Jorah fought for Dany, but he didn't die until he knew she was finally safe. And, of course, Lyanna Mormont lived and died like a total boss. Bad, squinting at my television set and trying to figure out what the heck was going on. I swear Brienne died like 4 times in that battle. The great... the cinematography of certain other scenes, though. For instance, the Dothraki horde charging into battle with their swords ablaze, and then seeing those lights go off one at a time. It was terrifying and beautiful. The lighting of the trench, also beautiful. Melisandre walking to her death at the end of the episode. The scoring of that moment was particularly lovely. And my favorite, Dany crying over Ser Jorah's body. She cried like a little girl who had lost her father, with Drogon curling around her like a faithful dog. I have to admit, I also cried like a little girl. But it was a great episode. I cried, I screamed at my television, and I can't wait to see what happens next week. Thanks a lot.
Now, I'm going to say our listeners know exactly how to push my buttons. You want to know why?
Tell me.
Because... when they start talking about cinematography and they start talking about score, man, they know the direct way to my heart. All right, let's do the next one.
Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Nadra from Lebanon. I just wanted to say that even though I have been listening to The North Remembers and I knew that we were anticipating a huge and marvelous episode, I don't think that I really understood how marvelous it was going to be. I think I had high blood pressure for the whole entire time, and I did cry a couple of times, but it was amazing. Far exceeded expectations, and... definitely worth every moment, on the edge of my seat the whole time, as I said, and wow, I don't know how they're going to outdo that. Have a great day.
Thank you so much for calling in. Yay! Oh, I loved hearing her voice. She's so sweet. seriously, I agree. I don't know how they're going to top it, but I will tell you, as I've said before, in Game of Thrones history, I have been slightly disappointed in the first couple of episodes of a season. It takes a while to pick up. Each of these episodes has been so amazing that I just feel like, we are climbing an infinity mountain of just brilliance and storytelling. And I love how we don't know what's coming next. So thank you for calling in.
Hello, Mary and Blake. What do we say to the god of death?
Not today.
Not today, bitches. what an awesome episode. I was sick to my stomach the whole time. I was like, Blake, getting up. I couldn't move. I had to like move around and hide behind the chair. And if that's not effective episode of television, what is? Like, when you're physically moved, and then when the final, you know, poke him with the pointy end or stick him with the pointy end happened. Woo-hoo! I was like, I think I leapt at the television. So I think it was a great episode, no matter what anybody says. And people who are upset with that John didn't get to kill the Night King. I mean, I don't know. I feel like the writers have been laying out Easter eggs for us that, or laying down the path that Arya is going to kill the Night King this whole time. She even did like the little switcheroo Chekhov's gun move with Brienne last season when she did whenever her and Brienne sparred in the courtyard. Watch it. Check out the little dagger move. Can't wait to see what happens next week. Thank y'all for making this podcast. I love it. See y'all later. Oh, this is Jess from Chicago. Forgot to say, but talk to y'all later. Bye.
Well, thanks, Jess, thank you very much. Mary, do you find that you're upset because Jon didn't kill the Night King, or do you think there's a reasonable argument to be made there, or do you think that it's just nonsense for people to think like that?
The world, girls. I mean, I'm down. If girls can keep kicking butt in this show, the amount of like male influence, and let's be real, like men ruined Westeros, okay? They ruined it, right? We had a Mad King, we had Bad Joffrey, we had Littlefinger, we had Jaime being a dumb man, throwing Bran out the window. Let's have girls have a chance, okay? We're gonna fix this up. Let's take a quote from Jurassic Park, you know, God creates dinosaurs, you know, God destroys dinosaurs, God creates man creates dinosaurs, dinosaurs eat man, women inherit the earth. I'm down.
You know, I love you so much. I love you so very much that you're my girl, and I have to pay this for you.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Just throwing that out there.
Hey, Mary and Blake, it's Jess from Chicago again. I just wanted to talk about the Unsullied for a moment. That was the part of the episode that got me, like, that made me cry the most because of their selfless sacrifice. I could not believe how affected I was during that moment and how effective the writing of that was, because, like, you just saw the Dothraki get, you know, dusted, and then all of a sudden, the Unsullied are just being wiped out by this like monster wave of zombies. And just that beat on Grey Worm watching his men get literally chopped up. They had little specks of blood. Ugh, it was so gross, but awesome. He had to look back and be like, oh, I got to pull up this trench or whatever. And that was really sad because the Unsullied, you know, from when they were like, you got to see their whole arc there in that moment of being little slave boys. And also it was like interesting commentary about, you know, brown people having to fight for white people, like them saying protect the retreat. Ugh, it was just, it was like a little political statement there that I was like, that one hurts as a white person. So I just wanted to include some commentary, pour one out for the Unsullied, who all they wanted was great honor. And so I think they got it. They better get an awesome burial in next episode. I want to see like that moment where Daenerys is like, the Unsullied are the reason like we even got to this point, y'all. So that's it. Unsullied, House Unsullied forever. Talk to you later. Bye.
You know, Jess makes a great point here about the Unsullied, I kind of got a little emotional too, especially as you see them retreating and they're all moving back in lockstep.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And that great emotional moment of Grey Worm looking at all the Unsullied. I think it's fantastic.
Yes. And as you said, you know, just seeing those lines, like they pretty much acted like the fire barrier. You know what I mean? Like they knew I'm going to die. I'm right. Literally here to be a force to hopefully hold a few more of these whites away. And I loved that shot of seeing the lines protecting their fellow brothers and like waiting, oh, protect the retreat. I can't even, I'm getting the chills. I agree. That was an emotional moment.
Yep.
Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Aaron from Middletown, Connecticut. I thought of one more thing I wanted to add. For my throne ranking, I think you guys are missing a big one. There's only one person that Dany would willingly cede the throne to, her own child. If she and Jon have a baby on the way, that baby could eventually rule the throne. Maybe Dany will die in childbirth, maybe Jon will die defending the child, but that child could grow up potentially mentored by Sansa, a great leader, and Tyrion as his hand, and Arya as Captain of the Night's Guard, and that child, maybe named Aegon Targaryen, could be the one to rule the Iron Throne. Just a thought. Thanks.
That to me actually makes a lot of sense. If Jon and Dany die, they have a baby potentially, and Sansa and Tyrion, in my most shipping moments of shipping, could be together and ruling as king and queen regent until the new Targaryen is ready to go, and Arya could be the head of the king or queen's guard. I kind of like that idea. I kind of like it.
I dig it too. It would have to mean, of course, that we'd have like a future in the future episode.
Like an epilogue.
Very Disney-like.
Yeah,
like this is so Disney-like. But let me tell you, on that Sansa Tyrion shipping note, like I kind of don't love their age difference, but on the flip side, Sansa has had such a bad experience with men, and she talked about how he was the best. And I just got to say that Tyrion got around. He's probably really good in the sack. Not as good as Podrick, but I bet he's like a close follow-up. So I would be very happy that Sansa would be emotionally taken care of and also physically taken care of.
I'm going to let that one sit.
She deserves it.
Yes,
let's be real. Sansa deserves some good rumpy pumpy.
No, she deserves some loving. That's what she deserves. She needs someone
all
to love
it.
On her.
No, I'm not just saying she needs sex, but I'm saying that she deserves all of it. She deserves to be treated like a princess. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. And I feel like so far Tyrion has been the only one to treat her as such.
Agreed.
I would agree. Yes.
Hey, Mary and Blake. Love the podcast. Want to ask you guys about Jon and Daenerys and Cersei. So, Mary, as you said, Dany has been striving for the throne her entire life. And I think I've heard a lot of people say, well, Jon and Dany fought so well together, they must not be upset at all about the fact that Jon is actually a Targaryen. I think that is dead wrong. If you're having an argument with someone you love, but you have a more pressing external issue, you're obviously going to solve that issue first. They weren't about to have a conversation about his claim to the Iron Throne as the Night King was at the walls of Winterfell. I think the fact that they fought together proves that they're good at putting the needs of the situation above their own personal issues. But I think there's still tension there, and I'm so excited to see it play out. You know, will Jon see himself as a legitimate king? Will he decide, I don't want that responsibility, and back Dany? Will Dany get jealous that he's a Targaryen and kill him? Does she love him enough to give up her claim? I am so confused. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm so excited. Secondly, Cersei. Cersei did a good job making sure that her forces were not in the north, so she didn't lose any of her army, and the forces in the north are now weakened, so that was a very good strategic plan. But I've been thinking about that expression she had on her face when Euron said, I'm going to put a prince in your belly, because it just had so much sadness in it. Is she menopausal? Is she actually pregnant? Is she grieving the fact that she cannot have a child? Does she have a child? I don't know, but I'm really excited and wanted to ask you guys what you think.
This one comes from Callan, by the way. You know, I just wonder, we're going down a rabbit hole here with Cersei. This is a big rabbit hole. Is she menopausal? Is she actually pregnant? Does she originally have a child in her belly? You know, the whole thing. You know, I'm actually going to leave this one off to you, Mary. What do you think?
Okay, so if she is menopausal, obviously she could be going without her period for quite some time, which could lead her to think she's pregnant. It's not like they have pregnancy tests out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like Jaime said she is pregnant and that Cersei has been pregnant. Cersei knows what it's like to be pregnant.
Sure.
Qyburn, like, probably, I don't know. I bet you he invented a pregnancy test. I mean, that guy's crazy. He probably could figure it out.
Yep.
So I don't know. I mean, we need to see in this future episode if she's like holding her belly, if she's grown at all, because speaking from experience, I mean, we know that she's had at least four pregnancies.
Four, yeah.
We know at least she's had four pregnancies. She should be popping by now. Okay. She should be having some belly action by now. So I'll be interested to see, because obviously we need to see Cersei by now. I'll be interested to see if she's bumping. If she's not bumping, then I would agree. I'd start to think of that menopausal thing. And I did feel like Cersei was sad when he talked about the baby in the belly. I don't feel any pain for Cersei, though. I'm not a fan of Cersei.
It's hard to feel pain for Cersei. I would agree. It's hard.
If she loses a baby, I will feel bad. As I said before, that's the only time I ever feel bad for Cersei, is the pain of losing a child.
Yep.
Hello, Mary and Blake. It's Jess from Chicago calling again, because you're the only people in my life who will listen to me talk about Game of Thrones. So I have this theory about what happened in the Godswood with Bran and the Night King. So they both give each other these like looks. These like really slight looks. And what I think those looks mean is that Bran was like, aha, you've walked right into my trap, because he knew Arya was going to eventually kill him. And the Night King was like, that's what you think, because the Night King also has the green sight. So he's like, I know that little ninja is hiding somewhere. I just need to draw her out into the open. And that's what he does. And then he's like, bam, gotcha, to her throat. But he didn't expect for Arya to be like, you know, ambidextrous or whatever. So that was the Night King being cocky, is ultimately what got him killed. And Arya's awesome skill set. I just wanted to say those words out loud to somebody other than myself. Okay, talk to you later. Thanks for the podcast. Bye.
Jess, you actually bring up a great point here, is that moment, that look that the Night King gives Bran. It's like this moment of, like, I almost felt like it was the Night King recognizing he screwed up, like he messed something up. And it was just a recognition of, oh, wait, I didn't see this coming, or something like that. I just wonder if there's more to that scene, there's more to that moment than we realize. And it's actually, when I was rewatching it yesterday, I had noticed it, and I was like, wow, it just feels like there's more here. What do you think about that, Mary?
Yeah, like, I'm wondering, like, are they having a little conversation in their mind? I still don't know what Bran was doing with those birds. Like, did he communicate? I don't know. There should be more, and hopefully there will be more.
I wonder if there's a moment where Bran has to like look back at this moment in time. And we get more out of it. Do you know what I mean? Like later episodes.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like might happen. That's what
it's gonna be like. It's gonna be like Endgame.
Don't say anything.
I'm just saying. I'm not spoiling anything. I'm just saying. For those of you who've seen it, I'm wondering if it's gonna be like that.
Okay. I like the idea. I like the idea.
Hello from the Highlands of Scotland, it's Kirsten Lang here giving my take on this episode. Help my Bob, I'm still recovering from those traumatic 80 minutes. The good. From the moment Melisandre, the walking matchstick, lit up the Dothraki, you knew this was going to be epic TV history. We were hauled through the emotional ringer on a journey of death and redemption. And it was just braw seeing Brienne and Jaime, Tyrion and Sansa and the Hound and Arya all becoming better people by being in one another's orbits. And the idea that every step taken led each character on their perfect path and purpose was genius. The bad. Ugh, it's psychic tree and wheels and an innate legs anyway. I've got three eyes and two wings. Bran. Not only did he do screensaver mode and work at the most inconvenient time, rendering himself as useful as a chocolate teapot, he couldn't squeeze out some gratitude to Arya, who only went and chibbed Coldimort, the Night King himself,
Coldimort,
and saved the entire world. Man, his white eye travels better be relevant in the next three episodes. And the great. is what made me greet the most. Ser Jorah, the explorer, dying in Dany's arms. Oh, I sobbed like a bairn who's just dropped their ice cream cone on the ground when Drogon curled round them in a condolence cuddle. That's all from me. Cheerio.
Oh, boy. Kirsten, she just kills it. She kills it every time. Thank you so much.
She rocks.
She called him Coldemort.
I love it.
You're a wizard, Harry.
Oh, thank you for that. All right, here's the last one.
This is Keisha from Odenton, Maryland. Take two. Love this episode. Episode 3, season 8. I don't know where to start, but with GBGs, my good was the flow of the episode. I loved it. Kept me on my toes. The bad, Jorah dying. We knew people were going to die. It wasn't as many as we thought, main characters. But Jorah, that hurt my heart. He died protecting the woman he loved, Dany. And the great was, of course, Arya with the sneak attack. The girl with no name killed the Night King. And it was wonderful. Kept me out of my seat, on my feet the whole time. The cinematography was great. I give it 5 dragons, 4 horses. And thanks so much. Can't wait until next Sunday.
Thank you, Keisha. I really appreciate it. Thank you for all the dragons and horses. I love that this is becoming a thing now. All the horses is becoming a thing. Marvin, yes. That is it for the voicemails. Do you have anything else to say about this fine episode, The Long Night? Anything else?
Oh, my God. All I can tell you guys is that Sunday night, Blake and I are going to be at a wedding. And I am so afraid of going on social media. Yeah, because we're not going to stay late at the wedding, but we are obviously going to be missing live Game of Thrones.
Can we just go home early? Can we just say that the kids are sick?
We might. I mean, I'm flying from Florida, going straight from the airport to the wedding. I will already be 2 hours late. Heck, we can leave 2 hours early. No, no. We will just watch when we go home. But just know, guys, that I'm just so happy we get to share this with you and geek out with you. It's such a good show.
All right, you ready to go close this bad boy out?
Yep.
All right, let's do it. Well, we wanted to remind you guys that you can go to maryandblake.com to check out this podcast, as well as all the other podcasts that we do, including OutlanderCast and This Is Us 2. And find us on social media at Facebook and Twitter. Just look up Mary and Blake. And if you want to find us on YouTube as well, so you can see all of our shows, and if you love YouTube, just look up Mary and Blake Media, and we are there. Mary, you're in Florida, and I hate you for it. But it's okay. I just miss, you know what it is? I just miss my bride. That's what it comes down to. But really, it's, you know, I went into work the first day that you were gone, and I told one of the ladies that works for me, I was like, oh my God, my wife is gone. Like, I hate this. And the girl's like, Blake, shut up. Shut up. You do this every time. That's enough. Get out of here.
I love it.
I don't know. And I'm really sad that we're going to miss live Game of Thrones. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to freak out.
We're just going to watch it as soon as we come home, babe.
You know,
we'll be okay.
Kit Harington actually said that episode 4 is his favorite of the season.
What?
It's his favorite of the season because everybody is in a place where they feel like they're comfortable and they feel like the world is saved. Yet, we still have a lot of things to happen. And that he says what happens in the 4th episode is very Shakespearean. And, you know, the cynic in me thinks that, you know, Kit Harington saying this about episode 4 and Emilia Clarke saying what she said about episode 5 is like a little bit of, shall we call it, politics? being like, since the reaction of episode three was not what they, I think, were intending, they're now building up the remaining episodes to get the taste off of people's mouths or get the news of the poor cinematography in the eyes of the general public out of the news. What do you think about that? That's the cynic in me.
We're going to be okay.
Yeah, I think we're going to be okay.
Everybody's going to be drinking the Kool-Aid. We'll all be good.
Well, I think that is it for now. Yeah, that's all we got.
That's it.
Let's get ready for episode four.
I'm Mary Larson.
My name's Blake.
And the North remembers.